Thank you. So good afternoon. Today I'm going to discuss how CBPR partnerships really have the potential to reduce health inequities by operating as social movements that pursue multiple forms of justice. Let me put this down. I'm also going to discuss how contextual factors potentially impact the strategies that CBPR partnerships use to advocate for social change, particularly as they relate to policy development. So before I dive into the particulars of this study, it's important that I situate this paper within a broader NIH grant, which seeks to advance the science of CBPR to achieve equity. As the slide indicates, this grant involves multiple partners across the country, and I am part of the New Mexico team, which is headed by Nina Wallerstein. So I'm representing some of the work of that group today. As the slide indicates, there's multiple aims within this study, and the particular paper that I'm doing today really falls under aims 2 and 3. In particular, one of our current research questions is how do CBPR partnerships engage in strategies that promote social justice? So with this particular paper, we're interested in describing how two community-based partnerships undertake social justice approaches to eliminate different kinds of health disparities. We're interested in comparing the development of social justice frameworks in community academic partnerships with theoretical models of how social, political, economic, and racial contexts shape action. And we're using an innovative methodological design by using historical timelines constructed by CBPR partners to illustrate how situating work within specific social, cultural, and economic determinants contributes to multiple strategies to reduce and eliminate health inequities. So as we know from sort of practice, policy work, and research work, there's continuing evidence that CBPR really combines research with community organizing to address health inequities. For instance, projects like the Trade, Health, and Environment Impact Project highlight how data and community organizing promote policy change in Southern California through agenda setting, the inclusion of community members as part of the process, and through the eventual passage of clean air policies. Examples like this demonstrate how CBPR contextualizes health inequities and creates processes that promote procedural and distributive forms of justice. And Meredith Minkler has done important work kind of delineating what these mean. Procedural justice simply refers to the right to equality in decision-making processes, and it emphasizes the need for democratic participation, which encompasses inclusiveness, deliberative communication, and perhaps most importantly, representation among historically disadvantaged groups. So a lot of us know through our CBPR work, this is the process of working with community and really involving community partners from an array of backgrounds as part of this process, not only of research, but for pushing for social change. Distributive justice is commonly defined as the right to equal treatment and equal access to the same distribution of opportunities as anyone else. And as this example elucidates, or at least in environmental justice work, this often refers to the need to really address disproportionate exposure to things like environmental toxins. So in addition to seeing how CBPR can promote these forms of justice, we are also seeing evidence that CBPR initiatives also can use research and dissemination techniques to both promote and enforce economic justice policies. The example that I'm highlighting here is a CBPR initiative which really sought to document and disseminate evidence of wage theft among workers in Chinatown. In this case, the team used their findings to help secure and enforce a wage theft ordinance in an area, in this particular area. So building on this important line of work, we are trying to expand this discussion by integrating social justice and social movement frameworks from both political science and sociology to deepen our understanding of CBPR's potential to reduce health inequities. We posit that that CBPR movements function in some ways as social movements because a lot of these projects are seeking to alter power relations, and they're seeking to affect social transformations by mobilizing citizens for political action. This social movement framework, however, not only calls for us to focus on elements like distributive justice and procedural justice that have been well articulated in the literature, but it asks us to examine how CBPR can achieve multiple forms of justice related to structural redistribution of economic resources, and injustices that are cultural and presumably rooted in cultural and social identity domination, non-recognition, and disrespect. So what we're seeking to do with this project is to illuminate how CBPR extends and uses multiple layers of justice to fight for a broader social justice agenda. And so just to explicate these sort of academic terms a little more in common language, structural justice really just refers to economic exploitation that occurs in many of the communities that we work with. And common examples for this remediation include struggles for fair wages and water rights, let's say, in rural communities. A politics of identity calls for greater acknowledgement of cultural diversity, but it also calls for societal transformations when identities have either been repressed, oppressed, or are rendered invisible. Common examples of remediation in this realm refer to same-sex marriage laws, and a most prolific example is the civil rights movement. So beyond expanding our view of how we think about justice as within CBPR, we're also advocating for a broader social science framework which suggests that health equity is impossible unless we utilize intervention strategies that place individuals and their pertinent institutions within contexts. These contexts often occur in the socio-political context, race, class, and gender relations, economic and political structures, and within cultural relations. Put simply, similar to other social movements, we suggest that CBPR partnerships do not select goals, strategies, and tactics within a vacuum. Instead, exogenous factors or contextual factors enhance or inhibit the prospects for mobilization. They cause particular claims to be advanced or ignored, and they impact the strategies that partnerships utilize. So I just gave you a mouthful of somewhat abstract language for how to think about CBPR as a social movement. And so I want to pause for a minute before I get into the particulars of the comparison and offer to you why you should care about this. From a research perspective, what our current work is doing is we're really trying to expand public health applications of social justice to include redistributive and identity justice. We're also working on reclaiming CBPR as a new health social movement that is dedicated in some ways to redressing power relations and moving towards social transformation. From a practice perspective, it's important to evaluate how the local community context shapes partnerships because this allows us multiple leverage points to pursue health equity goals. In other words, we should care about this because it allows us to develop alternative strategies that we may not have otherwise seen without broadening our framework. From a policy perspective, when we understand how different CBPR movements employ these goals, it allows us to develop practical strategies to pursue both informal and formal policy changes. And it allows us to imagine alternative strategies to push for wide-scale reform outside of the narrow policy realm. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about some initial analysis we've done on a couple of case studies to elucidate how contextual factors lead to different strategies among different partnerships, and to also begin to categorize how partnerships pursue different forms of justice. So just to give you some context, this paper is drawn out of the larger NIH grant, which I discussed earlier, which includes 7 case studies from across the country. And it employs a diverse set of methods, at least on the qualitative realm, to achieve some aims. The study included focus groups and partnership meeting observations, 13 to 18 interviews at each site, and a historical time of the partnership in context. As it says above, there were 7 case studies in the analysis, but for the purpose of this paper, we've limited our analysis to 2 important case studies. One occurred in the South Bronx, the Health Reach Project, and one occurred in a semi-rural area in New Mexico in the South Valley and was related to an environmental health project. So for this particular paper, we're using historical partnership timelines to analyze how partnerships really describe the history and evolution of their particular movement. These timelines highlight critical junctures or windows of opportunity for social change, and they also elucidate the contextual factors that shaped milestones in their work to reduce inequities. The historical partnership timelines were put together in 3 phases. After the initial interviews were conducted at each site, the research team developed a draft timeline based on these in-depth interviews. Then they convened focus groups with key informants for each site to co-develop the timelines. And 3 says 2, but it was 3. The research team also finalized the timelines with member checking from case studies. So I'm just going to give you a little bit about each case study, and then I'm going to show you the timelines and talk about some of the key differences between these groups. So the first case study was in the South Valley Partnership Environmental Justice Project. This project was located in a semi-urban area in the southwest, outside of the metro area of Albuquerque. This area has long and deep roots. It's heavily composed of Latinos of various kinds. And the purpose of this project was really to empower the community to push for water and sewer improvements in areas in the South Valley that really suffered from water pollution and poor access to water. The Bronx Health Reach Initiative was a large-scale faith-based initiative that had long and deep roots in the civil rights movement. It included over 70 organizations that were both faith-based and community-based. And the goal of this project was twofold. One was to eliminate health inequities related to diabetes in the area, and the other was to eliminate what this project deemed medical apartheid. Medical apartheid, in their view, not only included poor health access for African Americans and Latinos in that area, but it also included the way in which the health system unfairly treated members of those communities. Obviously, this case study took place in an urban setting, and it included African Americans and Latinos. So I'm short on time, so I'm going to go quickly. So I'm just going to give you an example of their timelines. I'm sorry that you can't see them better, but this is what their timelines are. This is a South Valley timeline, which really stems from the early 90s to 2012. And this is the Bronx Health Reach timeline, which dates back to what they would say are the urban riots. and revitalization to the present time when the partnership is really extending and moving beyond and expanding the coalition. So since you can't see the timelines well, what I've done for you is we've begun to analyze how these different contextual characteristics create different political opportunities for social justice in both projects. And so what I'll do, since I'm short on time, is just highlight a few key aspects of difference that are important to talk about. The first is that when we look at the South Valley Project, critical to how this movement took shape and continues to unfold is the issue of land grant identity and activism in this local area. For those of you who don't know, land grants were made to both individuals and communities during the Spanish and Mexican period of New Mexican history. There are two major types of land grants that were made to individuals and others that were made to communal groups of individuals for the purpose of re-establishing settlements in these areas. Land grants are really critical to this region because they served as a vehicle to preserve community, and they organized economic and social relations from the past all the way through the present. They also serve as a conduit for Chicano, Hispanic, and Nuevo Mexicano identities that are different and have some conflict in the area. Importantly, the South Valley has lost its original land grants, and those that remain have been stripped of their authority. So in New Mexico, oppression is intimately linked to land access and citizenship rights. As a result, racial and ethnic hierarchies vary according to citizenship status, Mexican heritage, and Spanish identification. As a result of this, this impacted partnership dynamics and how this group pursued their social justice strategy. Importantly, it leads to factions among Latinos, and it leads to sharp divisions between an increasingly white population that has moved into the area with more affluence. In contrast, the Bronx Health Reach Project situates its origins within both crisis and urban renewal in the 70s. With deep roots embedded in the civil rights movement, this project sees oppression as manifested through racial segregation and lack of services in the Bronx. As a result, this became a highly politicized faith-based initiative embedded in the long-term struggle for civil rights, urban renewal, and access to services. So this initial analysis is highlighting for you that these contextual comparisons offer different political opportunities for social justice. The next stage in our research is to really delineate how these political opportunities lead to differing strategies to achieve distributive, procedural, structural, and identity forms of justice in both projects. Since I'm short on time, I'll stop there. The rest of my presentation just simply highlights how each project attempts to achieve different forms of justice.
You have
a couple more minutes? Okay, I'll do it. Okay. So since the literature has spent a lot of time talking about distributive and procedural justice, what I'll do is I'll focus on how they attempted to advocate for structural justice and identity justice. And I'll start with the South Valley. So as I said earlier in the talk, structural justice really refers to redistribution of economic resources. It attempts to solve economic marginalization and deprivation. So in the issue, or for the South Valley Project, which was really an environmental rights project, they were focused explicitly on using land use, zoning, and planning policy in marginalized areas to give people better access to things like clean water. Okay? And they focused explicitly on depressed areas that were particularly left out of sewer systems and so forth and so on. Related to identity and recognition, the politics are very interesting in this case, and they highlight for us something that's important when we're talking about identity politics. Here, the issue has been, what does it mean to talk about Latino community? In this region, there are those who claim heritage and settlement in New Mexico for hundreds of years and relate their identity to Spanish colonialism tied to land grants. Others relate to the Chicano movement and have a politicized sense of identity, and although are related to land grants, have fought to keep control of them. And finally, there's a newly emerging immigrant community which was heavily involved in helping to bring awareness to this issue within the community. So in this particular case, the movement is still struggling around what it really means to fight for this, for these kinds of interests. In the Bronx Health Reach project, identity and recognition works very differently. And in this particular project, you have to note the presence of really politicized black churches who had been involved for decades in organizing around civil rights and also for improved housing and services in the area. But what was particularly interesting about this project is that they used the capacity of black churches to work within congregations from a faith-based perspective to reclaim images of health and beauty and link them with spirituality. So it became a project about reclaiming what it means to be beautiful and black. And finally, as I elucidated earlier, they really are a structural justice movement that is attempting to eradicate medical apartheid. Thank you. Questions? Yes.
I have a lot of questions for you because the methodology is so new to me.
Okay.
But I'm wondering about this timeline approach, and does it inform the research, or is it descriptive, or how does it fit into the timeline?
Okay. Let me get some water. Well, I suppose we could pretend that you know, it's informing. This is descriptive research at this point, I would say. But it's really important, right? Because this was a process in which partners were really developing their own history of events, and so we're using that event as a way in which to think about how these contextual factors influence strategies. I would say that this is, you know, descriptive research at this point, but long term we could certainly do something related to, you know, if we wanted to look at causal factors. But at this point it's really a grounding tool for us to really start to think about this maybe in a more dynamic way. One problem with my presentation is that we really haven't thought through how these contextual factors influence strategies, and that will become more dynamic as the process goes. But I think the timelines help us get at that the dynamism involved in this. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and just one really quick, the partner meeting observation data collection method.
Nina, you could probably speak better to that than me.
I mean, it varied in each project. I mean, we try to come to their meetings and basically
okay.
Observe and really bringing together the community and academic partners, getting grants done. I mean, the fascinating, the whole part of Sharon's work is that it isn't just getting the grant done. I mean, these are grant-funded NIH partnerships that are deeply embedded in a much bigger process of social justice and the capacity that they take to those folks based on their strengths and based on their understanding of history and based on their existing organizations and all of that. So, but it, so we observe the
not at all. Yeah.
Did
you
know, what? Yeah. So we it was almost, you know, we were there at each partnership for a couple of days.
Okay.
But then all out, we've been working iteratively the last year, couple of years, trying to write manuscripts of each partnership, which means that we're talking about historical timelines. We're talking about the impact. We're talking about what this, how they're learning from our just iterative dialogue over time.
Yeah. Okay, so I have time for one more question, but if you want to come and talk afterward, that would be great.
Yeah, I also love and fascinated about your presentation, and I'm trying to think about how to frame this exactly, but I'm fascinated especially by PR as a social movement. Mm-hmm. And I love it because it's placed here in the Community Based Public Health Caucus, which there's a whole history to this caucus. Mm-hmm. It's seven communities. 25 years ago, they came to develop this model of partnership between communities and academics and people who came in communities to serve that community in public health and how that could be redistributed power. And so when we formed, at the end of the time when we did this, about seven communities across the country, we formed the Community Based Public Health Caucus together to at least maintain what we call the social movement. Huh. We wanted to make change, at least initially, in the American Public Health System. So I'm trying to think about how to frame it, like we said, CBPH, Community-Based Public Health, what's the social movement? And you're saying that, and we developed out of that CBPR, which was our research methodology, that made sure we stayed close to CBPH. So I'm trying to think about how to look at this in terms of what we did over 25 years, and wonder if you could put that anything like that into context.
I can't right now, but I would, no, I mean,
you have 30 seconds.
I'd love to talk to you because that's really important. And, you know, in terms of conceptualizing this as a movement, we're still really, you know, as a team, we're really thinking about what that means. So I'd love to talk to you further. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, no, thank you. Okay.
And you asked a great question, and I was asked to kind of wrap things up, and I think we're out of time, but if I could just provide a response to Winnie's question, and also the
context.
Well, I as one of the original seven, I do think that we all saw CBPH as a movement, and CBPR perhaps as one of the methods, means through which we would achieve CBPH. I do think that the timelines as you presented are really, really an interesting visual, a great visual graphic demonstration that people in all sectors of CBPH can relate to and also come together to see the impact of an accumulative impact and the interaction between the various events. And it would be really cool to actually do that with each of the seven original partnerships.
Yeah.
And see how then they collectively came together to create more synergy, like for the community-based partner association network and so forth. So I think, I guess we're out of time. I guess that was sort of moderator's privilege, right? are there any